Let's take our Bibles and turn over to the Old Testament book of Ruth. Tonight we're wrapping up our study of the book of Ruth. Just been a short little 4 or 5 week series on this little letter at the Joshua, Judges, Ruth in your Bibles. And we're going to look one last time at the book of Ruth this evening. We're going to focus on chapter 4. This evening, the artwork that you have in front of you shows on the screen, I should say behind me, shows the four chapters of the book of Ruth. Ruth is a flower in the midst of a garbage can. It is a breath of fresh air in the midst of the times of the judges. Ruth chapter 1 verse 1 tells us that this story comes from the time when the judges ruled. Now, if you've read the book of Judges, you know this, it doesn't get any worse than the book of Judges. It was the worst time in Israel's life. And the things that happened in the book of Judges, just horrendous things. And it was a terrible, terrible time for about 400 years in Old Testament history. And in the midst of that horrible period of time, we have a love story called Ruth. And it's just like a breath of fresh air in the midst of all the problems of the times of the judges. There's four chapters. You see that these four artist depictions, chapter number 1, 2, 3, 4. In fact, let's step through the other slides if we could, and we'll catch those on the other slides. This is a story of a family that left Bethlehem and went over to Moab. The Elimelech and his wife, Naomi, and their two sons left Bethlehem because of a famine and went to Moab. And remember, that's not a good thing, because God told them what to do when they have a famine. And they didn't do what God said to do. Instead, they went into an idolatrous country of Moab. And there in Moab, their two sons grew up and married idolatry worshiping young ladies. And then Naomi's husband died, and then her two sons died. And say it, so Naomi is in Moab in an idolatrous country with two daughter-in-laws that worship other gods, and she becomes a bitter woman, and she decides to leave Moab and go back to Bethlehem. And so here's chapter one on the next screen. And here's a bitter Naomi, and here's Ruth, and there's the other daughter-in-law heading back. And Naomi, in her bitterness, gave some really horrible advice. We learned that it's never a good thing to take the advice of a backslidden Christian. not a good idea. And Naomi, in all of her bitterness, advised her daughter-in-laws to go back to stay there in Moab, go back to their families, go back to their idolatry, and maybe they'll find another husband, and they can just spend the rest of their life in idolatry. And Ruth said, no, I'm not going to do that. And Ruth made an amazing decision to go with Naomi and to embrace Jehovah God and to go to the land of Israel, which was a very difficult thing because the Moabites were specifically forbidden to the people of Israel. It was not a good thing to be a Moabite in the eyes of the Jewish people. So chapter 1 was all about bitter Naomi, horrible decisions that her husband made that she perpetuated, and then Ruth's amazing decision to leave Moab and go with her back to Bethlehem. Chapter 2 was all about Ruth's character. She gets back to Bethlehem, and her mother-in-law, they're in poverty. They have no husband. Neither of them have husbands. They have no one to take care of them, no one to protect them, no one to provide for them. They're in a horrible situation. And Ruth shines. Her character, her work ethic, her compassion for her mother-in-law, all the good things about Ruth go on display. And in chapter 2, she is gleaning in the fields of Boaz, and she meets Boaz. And amazing story of how Boaz took Ruth and was compassionate toward her, provided for her, protected her, and acted in grace and mercy to this Moabitess woman. And it was just an amazing picture of grace and mercy. Chapter 3. We saw last week in chapter 3 how that shock of all shocks, Naomi tells her daughter to go propose marriage to Boaz. And she tells her how to do it. And so Ruth actually goes and asks Boaz to marry her. And an amazing chapter, a stunning chapter of a mother-in-law telling her daughter-in-law to go propose for another man to marry her. And so we studied that last week, how that Boaz was the kinsman redeemer and was required by law to marry the widow of his near kinsman and raise up a male seed that would carry on the lineage of the deceased. Elimelech is dead. Elimelech's sons are dead. We got two generations without any male to carry on the lineage. And we have a young lady that's marriageable. And Boaz has a responsibility. Some kinsman has a responsibility to marry her and to raise up a son to be the heir of the family property and family lineage. And so he's slow. He doesn't propose marriage to her. He's kind of kicking back and taking his time. And so Naomi told her daughter-in-law, stop waiting for him to ask you. You ask him. And so she proposed marriage and asked Boaz to marry her. And that's where it ended last week in chapter 3. We're at chapter 4 for a few moments this evening. And we want to see how this story ends in chapter 4. And it ends with the birth of an amazing little baby boy that brings joy and happiness into the family. Well, how did this come down? At the end of chapter 3, Ruth has proposed marriage to Boaz, has asked Boaz to marry her. Boaz is blown away. Boaz did not consider himself to be a person that she would be interested in. We saw that last week in chapter 3, why Boaz had not asked her to marry him. He had shown interest in her. He had provided for her. He had protected her. He had all of these things that a young lady would interpret to be, this guy's interested in me. But the problem is he never pops the question. And so when she finally comes and asks him to marry her, he's blown away. And he as much as said, I'm shocked that you would want to be married to me. I would gladly marry you. Yes, I will marry you. However, there's a technicality here. There is a kinsman redeemer of closer relation to your husband and father-in-law than I am. And so I cannot fulfill that legal responsibility unless the nearer kinsman refuses to marry you. And so he protected her that night. He protected her physically. He protected her character, her reputation. And he provided for her and sent her back to her mother-in-law. And then in chapter 4, he got busy fast. I mean, he didn't waste any time at all. Chapter 4, verse 1, then went Boaz up to the gate and set him down. And there, behold, the kinsman of whom Boaz spake came by. Lo and behold, amazing. Fancy that. The very man who had the nearer responsibility, the greater responsibility to marry Ruth, happens to walk by on the very morning after Boaz has accepted Ruth's proposal of marriage. Providing, of course, that the nearer kinsman won't do what he's supposed to do. And so he goes immediately. He goes to the city gate, and here this guy comes, and this guy, Boaz says to him, says, ho, such an one, turn aside, sit down here. And he turned aside and sat down, and he took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, sit ye down here. And they sat down. So here we've got, at the gate of the city, we've got a quorum of 10 witnesses to witness what's going to come down here. And Boaz says to this guy, come sit down, we want to have a chat. And so he sits down. Verse number 3, said unto the kinsman, Naomi, that is come again out of the country of Moab, selleth a parcel of land which was our brother Elimelech's. And I thought to advertise thee, saying, buy it before the inhabitants and before the elders of my people. If thou wilt redeem it, redeem it. But if thou wilt not redeem it, then tell me, and I will know, that I may know. For there is none to redeem it beside thee, and I am after thee. And so he says to the guy, there's some property involved here. There's some land. Elimelech, our brothers died. His sons have died. There's some property that's available. And you're the nearest kinsman, and you have the responsibility as the kinsman redeemer to buy and take possession of that valuable real estate. And if you will, if you'll redeem the real estate, it's your right to it. You're the one that has the right to it. It's a great deal. You'd be crazy not to take it. If you'll redeem it, just tell me and I'll know you're going to redeem it. Because if you don't, I am. And the guy said at the end of the verse, verse number 4, and the guy said, I will redeem it. He said, of course I'll buy the land. You think I'm a fool? Of course I'll take the real estate from our near kinsman that died. And so Boaz then said in verse number 5, then said Boaz, what day thou buyest the field of the hand of Naomi, thou must buy it also of Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of the dead, to raise up the name of the dead upon the inheritance. It says there's a little catch here. Along with the valuable real estate comes a young lady. She's a widow lady. She has no male heirs. She's a Moabite. If you buy the property, she's a part of the package deal. You've got to redeem her as well and marry her and raise up a male son to continue the family lineage of the deceased. Well, the guy said in verse number 6, the kinsman said, I cannot redeem it for myself. I can't do that. Count me out, lest I mar mine own inheritance. What do you mean, lest thou mar thine own inheritance? What are you talking about? We've got to read between the lines just a little bit. We don't really know for sure, but it seems that the thought process is, I know Elimelech left and went to Moab. I know his two sons went, Naomi and the boys. I know they grew up and they married idolatrous women. I know that calamity fell to their family. I know Elimelech's dead. I know the two sons are dead. And you're asking me to marry a Moabitess lady and bring into my own inheritance all of the calamity that has left them with such loss for two generations? You want me to marry a Moabitess woman? No way. I'm not going to take the risk. I'm not going to take the chance. I'm not going to marry a Moabitess woman. I know what's happened to Elimelech and to his two sons. Count me out. I won't redeem it. I'm not going to mar my inheritance. Redeem thou thy right to thyself, for I cannot redeem it. Now, this was the manner in former time in Israel concerning redeeming and concerning changing. To confirm all things, the man plucked off his shoe and gave it to the neighbor. And this was a testimony in Israel. So they had this little thing. It was a common practice. The shoe, you identified or you expressed your ownership of your land by planting your feet on that land. And it was an expression of ownership. You went out and you planted your feet. And the shoe got planted on that land. And it had to do with a claim to ownership. And so they had a little tradition. If they were not going to claim it as theirs, they would take off the shoe that would have been on their foot when they planted their foot on the land. They would take off the shoe and they would give it to the person who is going to claim the land and redeem the land. So he reached down in front of the 10 people in the city. He took off his shoe. He gave it to Boaz. He said, have at it. I'm not going to plant my feet on that ground. I'm not going to redeem it if I have to get a Moabitess woman as my wife in order to get the land. I'm out of here. You can plant your feet on the land yourself. And so verse 8, therefore the kinsman said unto Boaz, buy it for thee. So he drew off his shoe. And Boaz said unto the elders and all the people, your witnesses this day that I have bought all that was Elimelech's and all that was Chilion's and all that was Mahlon's of the hand of Naomi. Moreover, Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of Mahlon, have I purchased to be my wife to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance, that the name of the dead be not cut off from among his brethren. And from the gate of this place, ye are witnesses this day. Boaz had the right to redeem because he was a near kinsman. He was a near relative, second in line. He had the power to redeem because he had the financial wealth and ability to purchase the land that was in question. And he had the will to redeem. I want Naomi to be my wife. I'm sorry, Ruth to be my wife. I want Ruth to be my wife. He had the right to redeem. He had the power to redeem. And he had the will to redeem. And so that day, before the elders in the city, he became the kinsman redeemer that took Ruth unto himself as his wife. So Boaz secured both the land and the wife of Elimelech and his two sons that were that was available by the laws of Israel. And you know, when you think of what Boaz did, he has, down through the ages, down through Christianity, Christians have looked back to Boaz and said, what an amazing picture of Jesus Christ. Because Jesus Christ had the right to redeem me because he became human. He had the power to redeem me because he had infinite value. And he had the will to redeem because he loved me with all of his heart and he wanted me to be his. And Boaz has come down to us as a great Old Testament picture of the redemption of a soul by the kinsman redeemer, Jesus Christ. He had to become human to be a kinsman, to have the right to redeem. He had to be God because he had to have infinite value to redeem such a large host of people. And he had to have a desire. He had to love us with all of his heart. And Jesus Christ is to us what Boaz became to Ruth in a very small way. So we have Boaz securing land and wife. We have the community blessing the marriage. I mean, the community was excited. Verse number 11 and 12, they say, you know, we're witnesses. And they pronounced a blessing on Ruth. They wanted Ruth to be fruitful. They wanted Ruth to have babies. They wanted Ruth's family, Boaz and Ruth's family, to be instrumental in the ongoing work of God's kingdom. And they used terminology and they used people from their history that were meaningful to them. And they basically said, as a community of people, we bless Boaz and his new wife, Ruth. And we pronounce our blessing upon this marriage. And then finally, we have God blessing the marriage. Look at verse 13. Verse 13, so Boaz took Ruth, and she was his wife, and when he went in unto her, the Lord gave her conception, and she bare a son. God blessed the marriage. And God allowed Ruth to be able to produce a male offspring that would continue the family lineage of those who had died in accordance with the laws of the people of Israel. Now, just a couple of real quick lessons here. Lessons I can learn. I want you to notice, I want you to focus in on verse number 15, and I want you to see family caring for family. Look at verse number 15. Verse number 15, well, let me go back at verse 14. The women said unto Naomi, blessed be the Lord. This is to the grandma now. The baby's been born. She bare a son. Now to the grandma, Naomi, they said, blessed be the Lord, which hath not left thee this day without a kinsman, that his name may be famous in Israel. What has transpired here has given the grandma, Naomi, meaning in life. That bitter Naomi, whose husband made a horrible decision and put his family in an idolatrous country, which resulted in his two sons marrying idol worshippers. One daughter-in-law who continued to be an idol worshipper. This woman who had become bitter, and she came back at the end of verse number, chapter 1, the end of chapter 1. She said, don't call me Naomi, because the word Naomi meant pleasant. She said, don't call me Naomi, call me Mara, which meant bitter. I'm a bitter woman, because God has been bitter in the way he's treated me. And this woman who was full of bitterness, whose husband had made horrible decisions that resulted in two generations of heartache in their family, she is now blessed of God. And she is told, Naomi, God has not left you without a kinsman. He has made his name maybe famous in Israel. and he shall be unto thee, the grandma, he shall be unto thee a restorer of thy life. All that she had lost, all the two generations had experienced because of her husband's horrible decisions, God now restores to her vitality in her old age as an old grandma. God has been a restorer of thy life and a nourisher of thine old age. For thy daughter-in-law, which loveth thee, which is better to thee than seven sons, hath borne him. Naomi took the child and laid it in her bosom and became nurse unto it. And so here's grandma being the one who's going to be there living in the home, taking care of the baby, along with her daughter, the mother. And here we have an amazing picture of family ministering to family, family taking care of family, family restoring and nourishing and caring for one another. You know, as our culture has replaced family with government bureaucracies, as our culture has taken and replaced the family with people in governmental offices and political places to be able to do what family's supposed to do, we've lost a lot in Western culture. The more that family takes care of family instead of government taking care of family, the better off we are as a people. Because God set it up that way. God set it up for family to take care of family. And we need to strive, even though we're in a difficult time in culture with regards to this type of thing. We need to recognize when we come across stories like this in the Bible that it was family who took care of family. And that was a blessing to the people of God whenever that happened. I think that's an important lesson to learn. I want you to see a second lesson. Naomi's bitterness became Naomi's joy. We already have mentioned that. The bitterness that she experienced at the end of chapter number 1 has become the joy here at the end of chapter number 4. As she holds that little grandson in her arms and holds that grandson close to her bosom and helps take care of that little grandson, her life is restored. Her joy is restored. Her nourishment is restored. She is beginning to live again. God's good about that kind of thing, you know. Even when we make mistakes in our past, make bad decisions, bring horrible things into our lives and into the lives of our loved ones. Sometimes it can even go on for a couple of generations. But you know, when we turn back to God, God is a God of mercy. God is a God who restores joy in place of bitterness. He gives us a second chance. I ran across this. I think I've probably mentioned it a time or two, and I'll probably mention it a whole bunch of times in the future because it just kind of stuck in my mind. I read somewhere, someone way back in history, someone said, the definition of grace is unlimited second chances. Aren't you glad God always gives you second chances? When you blow it, you make a bad decision, you do something really stupid. Sometimes you pay a price for it. The grace of God means that He'll always give you second chances. His mercies are new every morning, the book of Lamentations reminds us. Amazing God. He has given to Naomi joy. And then I want you to notice something else. This whole story about this Moabite widow being married by a kinsman of her husband and father-in-law. This is an amazing picture of the grace of God because of what happens at the end of the chapter. Verse number 17 says, the women, her neighbors, gave it a name, saying, there's a son born to Naomi, and they called his name Obed. And he is the father of Jesse, the father of David, the one whose lineage would produce Jesus Christ, the Savior of the world. This idol-worshipping Moabite woman that Boaz showed grace and favor toward because she had turned her heart toward Jehovah God. was willing to marry her. And the baby that was born happened to be in the direct lineage of Jesus Christ in His humanity. God is a God of amazing grace. J. Sidlow Baxter says, "This story, which begins with famine, death, and mourning, ends with fullness, new life, and rejoicing. Weeping has endured for a night, but joy has come with the morning. The sad beginning has given place to a sweet and beautiful ending." But could I ask one last question before we close the book on Ruth? What about that unwilling kinsman that said, "I won't fulfill my duty. I'm not going to take a chance on this Moabite woman"? Some have seen in that an illustration of the law. It was the law that said a Moabite unto 10 generations shall not enter into the gate of my people. The law can't bend. The law is strict, unbending, unyielding. The law can only condemn. It can never forgive. There's no capacity in the law to forgive. You break the law, you pay the consequences. End of story. There is no other possibility under law, because law can only condemn. Law cannot have mercy. Boaz, the unwilling kinsman, said, "I won't bend and take a chance." The law says, a Moabite to the 10th generation, no, I won't take a chance on this Moabite woman. But grace comes in, and grace provides a way to be able to forgive. Grace provides a way to be able to help. Grace provides a way to be able to minister. Boaz was all about grace and mercy. The word grace is used of Boaz in chapter 2, I think, 3, chapter 2. But the unwilling redeemer, kinsman redeemer, pictures the unbending, unyielding law that says no. You know, we could be impacted by that, the difference in character between the law and grace today. There's a church that's known by every homosexual in America called Westboro Baptist Church. Just about every military person knows about Westboro Baptist Church, because they're the ones that hold up the law in front of military funerals. They're the ones that hold up the law in gay rights parades. They're the ones that hold up the placards, "God hates gays." And they denounce and spew hatred towards those that are living in rebellion against God's morality. And they can't yield. They can't bend. They can't show mercy. They can't have grace, because they're all about law. Someone from here in the church who's in university right now, he and I were texting back and forth. And he made the statement that one of the things that his generation, millennial generation, one of the things that his generation has a really hard time with regarding Christianity is the way they treat homosexuals. And so I text back and I said, "What do you mean?" I said, this begs further elaboration. What do you mean the way Christians treat homosexuals? The people of your generation that have told you that, are they homosexuals and have they been treated poorly? But explain to me why you would say that. And he wrote back and he said, "No," he said, "I don't have any friends that are homosexuals. But he said here on college campus, there was a Christian group that came in and carried signs, God hates gays, God hates this, God hates, and used derogatory terminology to describe them. And said those homosexuals, that is Christianity to them. That's all that is Christianity to them. That's all they know about Christianity. You know, we can be like the unbending, unwilling kinsman that says no to Ruth. Or we can be like Boaz that loves people and cares for people. Even people that are not living the way we would approve. But we love them enough to witness to them, to share grace and the gospel with them, instead of just telling them we hate them and God hates them. We can either be like the unwilling kinsman, or we can be like Boaz. And we make that choice as to which is going to best represent our character in dealing with people. Boaz and Ruth ended the book of Ruth as a great, great love story of a man who took a chance on a Moabitess woman and showed grace to her because he believed that she had really changed in her heart. And he showed grace and mercy when others wouldn't. I want to be like that. Do you want to be like that? I want to be more like Boaz than that unnamed, unwilling kinsman that wouldn't show any compassion or care for this Moabitess woman who had lost her husband and her father-in-law and was having a tough time gleaning as a poor person in poverty in the fields, trying to just etch out enough grain from the gleanings to be able to keep her mother-in-law and herself alive. Boaz had mercy. God, help us to have mercy on people, to love people where they are. Maybe God will use us to share the love of Christ and to see God's grace work in someone's life. You say, is that condoning sin? No, that's not condoning sin. That will lovingly share with that person the sin that they're committing and how that God disapproves of it, but how He loves them and wants to change them and save them from their sin. And that's grace and mercy.